This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. The would-be U of I professor who stirred up controversy a year ago after he posted tweets critical of Israel says he's hopeful those for and against his possible employment in Urbana can reach agreement.
It's going to take a little bit of work to reconcile those two parties, but it's certainly not insurmountable.
Stephen Salida is now teaching in Beirut. You'll hear an interview with the controversial professor who has a new book coming out. During an edition of What's on Your Turntable, you'll hear from a Normal Community West high school student with a love of Pink Floyd. And we play a round of Can It Be Recycled with the Ecology Action Center's Michael Brown, who stops by to talk about this weekend's Household Hazardous Waste Collection event. All of that and a GLT News update on the way. It's October 15th, 2015. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from the Jack Baytall Real Estate Group. More information at jackknowshomes.com. This is GLT.
It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. The next Household Hazardous Waste Collection is set for Saturday. What is hazardous? As Michael Brown from the Ecology Action Center has told us before, it's anything that's toxic, corrosive, explosive, or reactive. Michael Brown is in the studio to answer your questions about the Household Hazardous Waste Collection on Saturday, and we'll play a round of Can It Be Recycled? To ask a question now or to play Can It Be Recycled, call 309-438-8910. Michael, thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas.
Thanks for having me.
The collection is an expensive enterprise. It takes place on Saturday. How much will it cost? Who's paying? And how much more in private donations do you need to raise?
So we've budgeted for this event $180,000. This is more than the last event that we did, you know, by the same public-private model. That one came to about $160,000, but we're, you know, anticipating, you know, increased participation by our local community as awareness continues to grow. So therefore, we increased our budget. We're very close to that goal in that we're about 90% of it at $162,000 raised. A strong portion of this is local government support. And so Bloomington, Normal, and McLean County all have been partners with us all along on these efforts. They helped, you know, in a very strong fashion in the 2012 locally funded event, here for this event, even more so. So $140,000 of our budget comes from our local government partners.
The event is 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday. How will the event work for those arriving at Mitsubishi Motors manufacturing plant on Saturday? What should people expect?
So when they get out there on Mitsubishi Motorway out to the plant, there will be signage as they arrive, directing people to the north entrance of the parking lots. From there, they will funnel down to our collection area. Along the way, there'll just be a couple brief stops where we do give people the opportunity to make a donation to the HHW fund paying for the event, as well just getting some basic information, how many households materials are they bringing with them, things like that, as well as some information on local programs for some of these types of materials where they can recycle these or safely dispose of some of these materials on a regular basis before they get down to actually the waste collection and processing area. And so there they'll have an opportunity to get rid of e-waste electronics with our partner Home Sweet Home Ministries, who will be collecting a broad range of e-waste at this event.
Better to bring it to this than dump your old TV on the side of the road, which I've been seeing a lot of. I see all of these TVs just scattered around. And Normal does an electronic recycling year-round, but apparently not enough. And this is one more opportunity to get rid of those troublesome old non-working electronics.
Exactly, which are banned from the landfill, and so they won't be picked up from your curbside. You do need to recycle those. So yes, you can get rid of your e-waste first as well. Town of Normal Police Department will be present to collect pharmaceuticals, medicines, including controlled substances.
Bullets?
Not bullets.
Okay.
That's not considered a hazardous waste that we can take here at this event. But yes, pharmaceuticals of basically any kind, they'll be taking. And then you get into the main hazardous waste processing area where you pull through in your car, essentially pop your trunk And the chemist there will remove the materials, and you drive on out, and you're done. It's pretty quick and painless. Wait times, of course, can vary, but we're strongly encouraging people, the more that you can essentially carpool with your neighbors, and that you send your households, several households worth of materials in one vehicle, that's going to help expedite the process for everybody.
You've been doing a social media push for volunteers. How is that looking? Do you have enough volunteers for the day?
We're looking good. We can still use a few more. People can sign up at our website. You can shortcut to the hazardous waste section by going to hhwmclean.org. We can still use a few volunteers, especially for the takedown at the end of the day, where we have to take down all these, you know, traffic barricades and flagging and whatnot. We could certainly use some help.
Same website if you're interested in donating for the household hazardous waste collection.
Collection.
Michael Brown is the executive director of the Ecology Action Center. We'll play a round of Can It Be Recycled in just a moment. And you can ask a question now as well. The number's 309-438-8910. Do you think events like this provide consumers an out? They could continue to buy the big gulp-sized container of herbicide, use a fraction of it for weeds on their sidewalk, and then know they'll be able to get rid of it at a collection event.
Yes, and so there is kind of the two sides of this issue, in that we are enabling our own habits, you know, by providing safe, easy, legal, free collection of these items on a regular basis. We're enabling ourselves to continue to buy these things. But we do know bigger picture, and our bigger priority is to start to work on source reduction, and that is, you know, encouraging our community to simply generate less of these materials, instead of the trend, which is the opposite, generating more and more. But we have, you know, more safer, cleaner options, more environmentally friendly options at the store, you know, all the time, in terms of green products, or there's traditional safer alternatives as well. And so we just need to make the proper choice as consumers, because in reality, we're not paying the full life cycle cost in that purchase price at the store. We're paying for it here later.
Well, let's talk about that. What about a fee built into the price of hazardous materials that consumers pay up front to help pay for disposal costs later? Are we headed in that direction?
We are. There's definitely a movement in that direction on, you know, the state and national scale towards more, you know, product stewardship programs where, yeah, manufacturers are involved, retailers, and everybody, so that we are, you know, more looking at the full life cycle costs and trying to plan for those from the get-go. One good example is the e-waste program, the electronics recycling program in place now in the state of Illinois. They've been banned from Illinois landfills for a few years, and in partnership with that, you know, a system was built that essentially retailers and manufacturers would be responsible for ensuring that a certain quota assigned to them was recycled each year. And so in essence, the manufacturers and retailers are now paying to help recycle electronics. That cost ultimately does come down to us as consumers in the retail price, which is only fair, that we're paying the true life cycle cost of the product.
Can the Ecology Action Center really do anything to reduce consumption except ask people or promote the fact that people should buy less of this kind of stuff?
The more that we can promote the alternatives, show how, you know, even just demonstrating, you know, as we do repeatedly when we ask for money from the community, from our government partners, from the public, from businesses to support hazardous waste, as the more that we show that the alternative is little to no cost if we just all choose the right thing, I think this does require, you know, a major marketing campaign in order to start to push this other viewpoint, which is, yeah, contrary to maybe what, you know, some of the big manufacturers of some of these products are doing.
With the prevalence of all of these hazardous materials, are you surprised that our drinking water sources, our streams, our rivers aren't more polluted?
Well, the thing is that we might not be seeing the impacts yet. And so, you know, the risk of putting this stuff into the landfill means that eventually, at some point down the road, we're looking at leakage from the landfill, as the landfill was not designed to contain these things. We don't know when that's going to occur, how soon, how late. It could be 5 years, it could be in 5 decades, and we don't know how much is building up in that in the meanwhile. And so the actual ramifications of our current actions and from the past, you know, couple decades, you know, may yet be seen.
Michael Brown is the executive director of the Ecology Action Center, and it's time to play Can It Be Recycled? host, Mike McCurdy. As always, we're joined by the Ecology Action Center's Michael Brown. Michael, tell them what they'll win.
Fresh air, clean water, a healthy environment, and a healthy community.
And can you place a value on that? Absolutely not.
Absolutely
not. It's priceless. So let's get started. You'll answer questions about any potentially recyclable item, but since the household hazardous waste collection event is Saturday, we're going to make this an HHW edition of Can It Be Recycled. The number to play and the number to try to stump Michael Brown is 309-438-8910. Let's talk tires first. I have bike tires hanging in my garage that I have to do something with. What do you do with old tires?
So bicycle tires versus automobile tires versus tractor tires, these are, you know, they're similar in function and purpose, but they are slightly different in terms of how they're handled. So bicycle tires are actually technically, you know, legal to put in the trash. They are, you know, somewhat different composition.
But I don't feel good about it.
I'm with you. And there has been talk, you know, in the past with some of the local bike shops about developing a program. Currently, I don't believe we have one. If I'm wrong, then I would hope someone would correct me and we will spread the word on that. But that is something to look for in the future for our community. But automobile tires, on the other hand, these are illegal to put in the trash. They do require recycling, proper disposal. Obviously, it's illegal to burn them, which is very problematic, or has been in the past. And even just storing them on one's property. You know, you see, you know, some rural properties sometimes with piles of them stacked up or thrown in the ditch. They do capture rainwater, and then we have problems.
Mosquitoes,
West Nile virus, and such. And so proper disposal of tires is important. You can actually, just about any day of the week, you can recycle them at a local tire retailer for a small fee, or actually coincidentally this weekend, same time as our hazardous waste collection, Bridgestone is doing a free collection for local residents. You must be within the pantograph distribution area. They say up to 4 tires for free per person.
And car tires, not bike tires.
Correct.
All right. Let's go to the phones. 309-438-8910 is the number to call if you'd like to join or play Can It Be Recycled. Ruth is on the air from Bloomington, has a question about aerosol cans. Ruth, you're on the air with Michael Brown from the Ecology Action Center. Oh. Ruth, you're on the air with Michael Brown from the Ecology Action Center. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah. I have one unopened can, aerosol can, and one that was opened but is partially used, but it's all dried up. Great stuff. Insulating foam sealant for windows and doors. Is that something you can take on Saturday?
Yes, but let me address those differently. You have one full can unopened. You have one can that's half full, half empty.
Right.
Let me say half full.
Pretty sure it's all dried up. Nothing's going to come out of it
anymore. So these are our aerosol products. So yes, this would be hazardous waste. That half full one we will take at the event, and we don't want that going in the trash. The completely full one, though, that sounds like that's perfectly usable. And so I don't want it at the event. We would take it, technically, but I don't want it there. I would rather see that go to someone else who could use it. I've used that in my home for insulating. It's good stuff. It's worth, you know, one can is, what, $6, $7? And so if you go to our website, ecologyactioncenter.org, on the left-hand side of the page, there's a link to McLean County FreeCycle. You go there. This is a free service to post things that you have to give away for free. Someone will respond, and you just make arrangements for them to pick it up.
Well, all right. Thank you very much.
Ruth, thanks.
Thank you for all you do.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Ruth. Jan is on the line from Normal, Illinois. I'm not sure what Jan actually wants to ask. Something about lava?
No, it's a lava lamp.
Oh, a lava lamp.
It's broken. Well, I think the light works, but the lava part doesn't work. I don't know if I could upcycle it to clean out the lamp, or can I just take the electronic part?
So let me just, I have some experience with lava lamps. All right, I've had a couple of vintage lava lamps. If the wattage of the bulb isn't large enough to heat up the wax or whatever substance is inside the lava lamp, then it won't sort of start moving. So that may be the issue. If the electronics work, then is there still liquid in the lava lamp?
Yes.
Hmm.
So you think a bigger watt?
Maybe, but let's assume that it doesn't work and that you do want to get rid of it. Michael, what would you do with that?
So yeah, the electronics, the wiring, all that is recyclable. You know, any of our local e-waste collection points would be happy to take that. I mean, there's at least some copper wiring and whatnot in there. So yeah, you could bring it to this event, but I do want to encourage people, if you only have things that fall into that e-waste category, then don't come to the event, but rather look at our local listings for e-waste drop-offs on our website, whether it be the Town of Normal or Home Sweet Home Ministries, one of those places, because your wait time will be much shorter if that's all you have.
A lot of times those lava lamps are two pieces, so you have the electronic part, and then you have the glass vessel that sets on top.
Right. Ooh. And that's unfortunately unlikely to be recyclable, but as Jen was saying, you know, trying to upcycle, you know, parts of that, that's a great idea.
All right, Jan, thanks for your question. Ben is on the line from Bloomington. He has a question we've gotten before. It's a recurring issue. Mm-hmm. Ben, what's your question for Michael Brown from the Ecology Action Center?
It's the ever dreaded VHS cassette cartridges.
So yeah, there used to be a program, a mailback program that would take them. Unfortunately, that doesn't exist anymore. The good news is there's nothing particularly hazardous in them. The bad news is there's no recycling programs that we're aware of anywhere for those right now. Conversely, DVDs, CDs, those type of electronic media are recyclable at most of our e-waste drop-offs here in town. But VHS tapes, old audio cassettes, are not at this time, unfortunately.
So I don't need to feel quite as guilty about putting
correct,
them out there.
Correct, because it's not hazardous. So it's just the residual guilt, if you really wanted to recycle it but can't, that still might linger. But
Are these commercially available tapes, Ben, movies that
some
you...
Some of them are commercially available, but we found a scarce market for those, too.
Yeah, so somebody else may want to watch those.
Right.
So one of the free cycle events.
Exactly. Free cycle is definitely a good option for anything that's, you know, usable by someone else and something legal to distribute. And so just there have been questions sometimes about, you know, copied VHS tapes and such, which, yeah, we just want to keep it all completely legal.
All right, Ben, thanks for your call.
Yes, that
does it. Thank you. Yeah, glass can be tricky because not all glass is manufactured the same. Tom from Bloomington is on the line has a question about glass recycling. Tom, you're on the air with Michael Brown from the Ecology Action Center, and you're playing Can It Be Recycled?
Yes. I've spent 35 years in the glass container industry, and Bloomington Normal is in an ideal position with a glass plant in Streeter, Illinois, and a glass plant in Lincoln, Illinois. Glass is infinitely recyclable. I mean, one glass container can be crushed, melted down, and made into another glass container. Transportation costs are minimal, and I'd just like to hear what Bloomington Normal is doing about capturing every glass container that is put in the recycling bin and getting it to a market where it is indeed raw material.
I'm guessing.
And I'll take your comments on the phone.
Tom, thanks for calling. I would guess some of this deals with the value of the glass.
Exactly. And yeah, so it's my understanding, you know, we'll all commodities, recycled commodities, you know, their values fluctuate. You know, glass is one that tends to be fairly low, and so just finding enough markets for it. And so while a local, you know, facility to actually recycle it could help with that if that's being, you know, creating new products right here locally. But that is something, you know, that's a bigger question, you know, something that we'd need to involve the economic development, you know, offices and agencies here in the community to look at that and the need and as far as labor and such. And so this is something, feel free to give me a call at the Ecology Action Center if you want to continue this conversation, because, yeah, that's maybe a bigger, more in-depth conversation.
But plate glass is different than a beer bottle and different than mason jars. And Josh is on the air, has a question about old mason jars. Josh, you're on the air with Michael Brown from the Ecology Action Center.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Yeah, I actually have an old mason jar that has gasoline in it that is several years old.
Uh-huh. So it's not just a mason jar.
No, not just it. There's some bonus material.
Bonus in quotes, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that gasoline you can bring to the hazardous waste collection event. Since it's in the mason jar, which is not a traditional gasoline carrying vessel.
Or safe or approved, right? I'm curious, Josh, how did the gasoline get into the mason jar?
Well, I bought a new gas can a couple of years ago, and I didn't realize there was still gasoline left over in the old one.
Sure.
And when I found it, the old gas can was made out of plastic, and so I decided to recycle it, but I didn't want to just toss the gasoline that was left over in a way, so I put it in a mason jar.
And Michael, thank you for not pouring that down a storm drain.
Yes, absolutely. But I would encourage you, please label that as gasoline so it's easier to identify. And so that would be among, the automotive fluids that are collected at the event. But as well, if that's the only thing you have to bring, you can recycle a lot of automotive fluids at local service stations. A good example is Team Automotive in Normal, that they will accept old used or gasoline or oil gasoline mixtures. And so yeah, just go there if that's all you have to bring. If you have a wide variety of materials, then come see us on Saturday.
Great. Thank you so much.
Josh, thanks for playing Can It Be Recycled with Michael Brown. He's the executive director of the Ecology Action Center. There's a household hazardous waste collection site, so we're doing a household hazardous waste edition, but you'll answer a question about anything, because maybe people don't know that their VHS tapes aren't hazardous.
Exactly.
I mean, how would you actually know? You can play Can It Be Recycled by calling 309-438-8910. I was surprised to learn from you that oil-based paints are being phased out, and the only thing you can do with leftover oil-based paint or stain is to take them to a collection event.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, just more and more latex paints can do the job that oil-based paints did in the past in terms of, greater durability, longevity, for outdoor use and all purposes. And so oil-based paints are no longer needed for most applications. And so if you go to the store right now and try and buy oil-based paint, there might be a little on the shelf, but it's going to be, much fewer options than what you had in the past. It's been replaced by latex.
What's the issue with fire extinguishers? You don't take them at the Household Hazardous Waste Collection event on Saturday.
We don't, and there is a short list of other things we can't take. And part of that is literally it is expenses and keeping the budget reasonable for this. I mean, if we want to accept everything, all hazardous wastes, then we would have to budget much bigger, and we probably wouldn't have reached our goal, and so we wouldn't be holding the event. And so we do just have to keep the list of accepted items reasonable so that we can hold this on a regular basis.
Lead-acid batteries also seem like it would fit in the corrosive category. Why no lead-acid batteries?
Lead-acid batteries tend to be automotive-type batteries, which you can recycle at places that sell them. And often, actually, you will get a small amount of money in exchange.
309-438-8910 is the number to call. Let's go back to the phones. Clark from Bloomington has a question about some electronics. Clark, you're on the air with Michael Brown from the Ecology Action Center. You're playing Can It Be Recycled?
Yes, I was wondering about ballasts from fluorescent fixtures.
Yes, we will accept those as well as the fluorescent bulbs as well. The only caveat is, like everything else at this event, it needs to be residential generated waste and not coming from a business.
Clark, thanks for your call. Thanks for playing Can It Be Recycled. Michael Brown, thanks to you for playing another round of Can It Be Recycled, and thanks to everyone who played along.
This program was edited for broadcast. This is Johnny Olson speaking. I'm Mark Goodson, Bill Todman production.
You like the production values here?
I do. This is great. thanks for having me. It's been a great show. I hope I won.
We all won, I think. The Household Hazardous Waste Collection event is 8 a.m. Saturday at Mitsubishi Motors Manufacturing Plant. Wraps up at 2 p.m., correct?
Yes, it is.
This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Confused by the latest trends in pop culture? On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we explain it all for you.
Twerking, it reminds me of in third grade, we called each other twerps.
Right.
And a twerp was someone, as I learned, who farted in the bathtub and then bit the bubble.
No, that
doesn't sound like public radio, but it is. Join us for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. Listen for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Saturday morning at 9 on GLT. News and ideas.
Support for GLT comes from Heritage Health. Heritage was the first to offer specialized healthcare services for seniors in Bloomington Normal. Details about the Heritage of Heritage on the web at heritageofcare.com.
This is GLT.
You're listening to Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Stephen Salida was back on the U of I campus this week for the first time in a year. He's teaching now at American University of Beirut, but he says he'd rather be teaching at the University of Illinois. Salida sued the U of I after the administration and board of trustees rejected his expected faculty appointment. They were reacting to controversial tweets critical of Israel that Salida posted during the 2014 Israel-Gaza conflict. The controversy is the subject of Salida this new book, Uncivil Rights, Palestine, and the Limits of Academic Freedom. Stephen Salida visited Champaign-Urbana this week as part of his book tour, and he spoke with Illinois Public Radio's Jim Meadows about that dispute with the university and how he'd like to see it resolved.
It would be wonderful to be reinstated to the position for which I was hired. I hope for an outcome that does well by various constituencies at the university that will allow us, I think, collectively to move beyond the troubles and the controversies over the past 14 months.
What are the constituencies that you have in mind?
I think folks who support my reinstatement and folks who don't. Right? And I think that to some degree it's going to take a little bit of work to reconcile those two parties, but it's certainly not insurmountable or impossible.
I've certainly seen the support you've garnered at the university in actions like the American Association of University Professors declaring a censure against the U of I because of your case. And I also can tell from comments posted on news articles, letters to the editor, that a lot of people in this region outside of the immediate campus community think your dismissal was justified. There was a letter to the editor in the local paper, the News Gazette, called you a hate-filled, unconscionable malcontent with a sick philosophy concerning Jewish people. Do you really want to work at the U of I knowing this is what you'd be coming back to?
Sure. I think the letter writer who you just read is reacting not to things that I've actually said or things that I actually support, but things that some people have represented me as saying and reporting, and I very much like the opportunity to clear up these misconceptions.
Do you think that you can reach those people who hold those views?
We don't all have to agree with one another. I'm not necessarily interested in convincing detractors that my way of thinking about Israel, Palestine, or academic freedom, or whatever is the correct and only way, simply to clarify what my points of view have been and what they are, then it's up to them whether they want to accept them or not. But nothing has been said that justifies the abdication of free speech or academic freedom.
That makes me think of the reasoning that the university administration used in withdrawing your appointment, and that was over the issue of civility,
right,
and that civility was essentially for the protection of the students. In your book, you question the civility argument. At the same time, it's clear you don't see yourself as uncivil. What's the problem with the civility argument as the university presented it?
My argument in Uncivil Rights is primarily that incivility is not a neutral term, and it's a term that can be arbitrarily applied to viewpoints that people in power find distasteful or that they find threatening in some way, and it can be used then to mark those ideas and their speakers as somehow unable to access the respectable spaces of campus. And in that sense, it's a troublesome proposition, because you can put 10 people in a room and ask them to define civility or incivility, and you're going to end up with 10 different answers.
Along with the charge of incivility has been the charge of anti-Semitism. It was in that letter to the editor I read you a quote from. You've denied that. At the same time, you're clear in your position in Uncivil Rights that you are anti-Zionist, if that's correct. What's the difference? How do you make that difference clear to people who don't see it?
Zionism is a distinctive political ideology that necessarily favors one community over other communities, primarily on the basis of religion or even biology. I do not see it as coterminous with Jewishness or Judaism, because ever since we've had Zionism, we have had people who self-identify as Jewish speaking in some way in opposition to it, and that's very much the case today. It's dangerous in many ways to conflate Judaism or Jewishness and Zionism, because the practices of Zionism are inherently violent, and we do not want to confer that violence to the cultural context of Jewish practice or Jewish identity.
It sounds difficult, though, knowing the arguments I see the attacks made on you, to make that difference clear to people who disagree with you sharply, and then let them know that you believe, if I am correct, that your criticism of the Israeli government is not the same as wishing ill will towards the Israeli people.
I have no desire for any sort of displacement of Israelis, any sort of violence practiced against Israelis. My ideal outcome would be a secular democratic state in which all communities have equal rights and, in fact, come eventually to share not only a nation, but a national identity. I've never advocated in any of my various political viewpoints, you know, a certain sort of violence. It's anathema to my political sensibilities and to my sense of morality. Part of the problem is this conflation comes about because people find it difficult to separate Israel as a nation state from people who are identified by or identify as Jewish.
This did start with the reaction to tweets that you made last summer. In your book, you write about how those tweets, you say, are taken out of context, that there are a lot of other tweets that you sent out which were obviously peaceful in aim. What did you say in those other tweets?
I note that I make no moral distinction between the value of a Jewish life or an Arab life or any life for that matter. I see them all as equally valuable. I make it clear that I'm not into a sort of tribal politics in which I automatically agree with Arabs and disagree with Jews, that in fact I'm in political and moral solidarity with many Jews and in serious disagreement with many Arabs. So it's I very often articulate a very basic version of secular humanism that's very old-fashioned, that dislikes the idea of human hierarchies, that dislikes the idea of disparate rights and privileges, and that sees us all, as I say in one tweet, as equals in the eyes of God.
Looking back at those tweets, I guess after all that's happened, do you regret any of the individual tweets that you sent out?
The political positions that are inscribed or articulated in those tweets are ones that I would not walk back. I do wish that there were better opportunities earlier on for me and some folks at the University of Illinois who were concerned to have had conversations about the meanings of those tweets and the my use of social media, particularly as a private citizen. But in terms of the sentiments, the political sentiments that underlie those tweets, they're still viewpoints that I hold to and that I find defensible.
Imagine that you're back, that you are teaching at the U of I. What sort of impact, starting in the American Indian Studies program, what sort of impact would you want to make as a faculty member?
I would be really interested primarily in playing whatever role I can in helping to stabilize and rebuild the program, which has seen pretty significant losses. They're down to two faculty members now. And I would also be very interested in being in conversation on campus and beyond about what it is people do in the field. You know, I've heard a lot of reaction to my tweets and the ensuing controversies. And one thing that I've noted is that a lot of folks have some pretty common misconceptions about American Indian studies, about indigenous peoples, indigenous communities. And I think one of the things that we can do in that field, and a lot of people are doing it already, of course, is to share our knowledge of what occurs in the field with audiences who might not have had access to it.
Well, Professor Salina, thank you very much for talking with me.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm Jim Meadows.
Stephen Salida's appointment as a U of I professor was withdrawn a year ago. It was November of last year that Salida instigated legal proceedings against the U of I. You're listening to Sound Ideas.
Support for GLT's Sound Ideas comes from the Jack Baytall Real Estate Group at Keller Williams, committed to helping you find the right match. Buying or selling your home can be easy. More information at jackknowshomes.com. This is GLT.
It's an edition of What's on Your Turntable that's ahead during Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Fantasy sports leagues have been around for a while. Betting on fantasy sports teams has recently become a big business based on customers who are difficult to discourage, which has puzzled Sound Ideas commentator and only a game host, Bill Littlefield.
Sports is full of numbers, and one of the more revealing numbers to surface this week involves the people betting on fantasy sports. The business of betting on fantasy sports is dominated by two companies, FanDuel and DraftKings. Before last weekend's actual football games, news surfaced that an employee of DraftKings had won big by betting with FanDuel after he'd figured out where the sucker money was going. Did this breaking news discourage people from betting with either of the two companies? It did not. According to an organization called SuperLobby.com, both FanDuel and DraftKings have just enjoyed their biggest weekends ever. If you enjoy betting on roulette and you learn that the wheel at your local casino is rigged, do you keep betting on that wheel? If you're nodding your head up and down and mumbling, yes, yes, I certainly do, then you're the sort of customer upon whom FanDuel and DraftKings can count. The shred of legitimacy to which these companies cling is the shaky contention that since, allegedly, clients thoughtfully pick players for their fantasy teams, they are engaged in a game of skill. But even those fans who know all about which quarterback just had a fight with his wife have no chance against insiders with access to the betting behavior of the masses. That the enterprise features fantasy sports suggests a certain playfulness, but the real fantasy is the contention that fans who pay FanDuel or DraftKings aren't gambling. As Boston Globe columnist Kevin Cullen opined on Tuesday, if you're taking in a lot of money on wagers and paying out a lot less, you're in the gambling business, not the skill business. I couldn't have said it better myself, which is why I didn't try. That DraftKings and FanDuel enjoyed their most prosperous weekends following the news that an employee of one clip joint had made a bundle betting with the other one suggests that nothing short of a bust, under consideration in various state office buildings, will deter gamblers from placing doomed hunch bets disguised as informed choices. And after those busts, if the states don't develop new lotteries based on fantasy sports, they'll be missing a great bet.
Bill Littlefield comments on issues related to sports. He hosts NPR's Only a Game, heard each Saturday morning at 6 on GLT. And you can hear his comments regularly on Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Jason Breedle is a linguist living in Chicago. In the last decade, he's published 4 books of poetry. And in this edition of Poetry Radio, he reads from his performance at the Spoon River Poetry Showcase at Ewing Manor in April of 2014.
Do you want to live dangerously? Try wrapping yourself in newspaper and sleeping on a bed of grenades next to a can of gasoline.
This is Poetry Radio. I'm Bill Morgan. This time, Jason Breedle is going to read his own poem, Yellow.
2 days ago, Mom threatened to randomly kill one person every hour until I cleaned my room. I went for a walk. I was happy to be outside, but unhappy someone might die. Was this really happening? I drew a pretty good caricature of a pigeon and gave it to a magician who was feeding it. He handcuffed me and placed me inside a box. When he opened it, I was gone. What was once a dream come true had become a total embarrassment. Do you want to live dangerously? Try wrapping yourself in newspaper and sleeping on a bed of grenades next to a can of gasoline. It's hard not to fall in love while wearing prescription pants. When I climb into a sphere of light, it explodes. This is why yellow is the greatest color.
That was Yellow by Jason Breedle, read by the poet. I'm Bill Morgan. Poetry Radio is a co-production of Illinois State University's Department of English and GLT.
Hear a new poem every week on GLT and subscribe to the podcast at WGLT.org/poetryradio. It's Sound Ideas. Occasionally, we send John Norton out to local record stores to hear what's playing on the turntable while customers browse the bins. And occasionally, we ask what's playing on your turntable. Normal Community West High School student Matthew Mullins answered our call. In this encore edition, the now high school junior takes us through a classic rock album from the late 1970s.
So we're literally on the stage at Normal Community West High School. The turntable is spinning Pink Floyd's The Wall. And Matthew Mullins at Normal Community West High School is sitting right next to me. And we're enjoying this classic 1979 album. How did you get turned on to this band in the first place?
Well, I got turned on to this band by my dad, who really inspired me to listen to different genres of music, especially classic rock and progressive rock and all these different styles. And then I heard about the British Invasion, which was all these famous bands like The Who, The Beatles, The Rolling Stones, and then my favorite band came up, Pink Floyd.
So how does an album that's, 35 years old, 36 years old now, how does that appeal to a 16-year-old?
Well, I listened to music differently, especially growing up, playing guitar at 9 and, singing young and really hearing music differently than a lot of other kids my age do. Not that they don't like Pink Floyd. Many students actually today still like them, but then they realize how good their music is because it's so interesting to the ear, and it's a coming-of-age story, really. They just show different aspects of life, and their musicality is so amazing. You have Richard Wright on the keyboard, Sid Barrett, who is an original member of the band who later died, and then you have Roger Waters, one of the best lyricists ever, David Gilmour, an amazing, unique guitarist, and Nick Mason on the drums with different time signatures. So I think that's really why it appeals to the younger crowd today still.
So let's move the needle to another track. What do you want to talk about here?
I'd like to talk about Mother.
Oh, I love Mother. Hang on a sec.
Mother, should I run for president?
I love this song so much just because if you've ever seen the movie The Wall, it's built around this guy named Pink, who is a rocker. And throughout the whole spectrum of his life, he goes through many challenges. And that's what sort of starts off like another brick in the wall, because each song describes another brick being placed in the wall where he's splitting off from society and sort of committing like soul suicide. And it happens because a lot of different factors, but Mother was about how his mother was so overprotective and just smothering with love with him. And it's just about how mothers can be overprotective and don't realize the dangers of holding on to their son so long.
Mama's gonna keep you right here under her wing. She won't let you fly, but she might let you sing. Mama's gonna keep baby cozy and warm.
All right, well, we're listening to The Wall album. Matthew Mullins, a sophomore at Normal Community West High School, is taking us through this classic 1979 album. We're literally on the stage in the auditorium at Normal Community West High School during Matthew's lunch hour, and let's move the needle to another track.
I'd like to go to Hey You, because I just love that song so much.
All right, hold it. All right, okay.
It has a lot of meaning because in the movie, Pink is sort of branching himself off from the society because everything is going wrong in his life. And in Hey You, they actually didn't put it in the movie, but the song could really cover the whole movie itself, because he built the wall and then he's saying, hey, you, can you help me? And then he gets more desperate as the verses go on. Can you feel me? Can you touch me? Because he's slowly losing his power of self-esteem, and he's losing his life because no one is helping him or supporting him throughout the whole movie. And it really just touches the heart when you hear the song.
As a songwriter yourself, what do you take away from Pink Floyd?
I take away their amazing lyric writing, because it's so symbolic and everything they do has a meaning. And that's why I really love The Wall so much, because it's all based on one guy's story and how different things affect his life.
Well, let's go to another track on the album. What do you want to move the needle to here?
I like to move it to Comfortably Numb. This song has a lot of meaning, because in the song, Pink takes a lot of drugs and is hallucinating a lot and experiencing them, because in the song it says, when I was a child, I had a fever, and it shows how he started his journey with drugs and how they've affected him and his relationships. That's a good story behind it, but then when you get to the musicality of the song, you hear David Gilmour's guitar parts. He actually, on the first part, starts very slow, just going down the neck a little, sort of keeping it nice and really keeping that vibe of a drug effect almost. And then he goes in the second solo very deep with a lot of emotion in it, and that's sort of showing like how much the guy has changed in The Wall.
On the spectrum, Waters and Gilmour?
I have to go with Gilmour just because I'm a guitarist myself and I love to play his solos, like Uncomfortably Numb or just listen to Time, and they're just amazing solos, and there's so many dynamics and so much that goes into it. And actually David Gilmour writes a lot of the lyrics with Roger Waters, and it's actually quite amazing what they can do, because their chemistry was so good together during their time as a band.
Well, we've got what, another song before we're done?
I would say Young Lust. Okay. I think it has a very gritty tone to the song, and it's very aggressive, especially in Roger Waters' voice. And you can hear sort of what it's like to be a high school student and how you're growing up and you want like a girl in your life if you're a teenage guy, or if a girl wants a boy, and that's what Young Lust is about, and sort of having the desire for someone in there. And that's what Pink wanted in the movie, and you could see the high school kids going around having a good time, and they just long for each other just to be there with them.
Matthew Mullins, Normal Community West High School, thank you so much for talking about the album that's on your turntable, Pink Floyd's The Wall. Any final thoughts here?
I just love Pink Floyd so much because they inspire me to write stories rather than just love songs that you normally hear today, and write something that's worth a lot more than just I miss you and I love you. And that's what I really love, because even on songs from different albums like Wish You Were Here, that was such like a personal song, and how they used the AM radio to really tie in the audience and listen to it. And then you have something so simple as the solo by David Gilmour, and just their buildup of their songs and the breakdown of their songs, and how every song has a specific meaning, and it's your own interpretation, and that's why I really love Pink Floyd.
Young Lust, from the classic Pink Floyd album, The Wall. Our thanks to Matthew Mullins of Normal West Community High School for sharing the music playing on his turntable. What's playing on your turntable or MP3 device or phone? Drop us a line at WGLT.org or at Facebook.com/WGLTFM. Have you seen the new WGLT.org? You'll find even easier access to more content, including your favorite Sound Ideas features, curated in a handy tab on the homepage. Our website is also where you can send comments about what you hear on Sound Ideas, or email us. The address is news@WGLT.org. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, News and Ideas.